Ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of The Essential 11, brought to you by Acton Academy, Acton Academy Placer, Apogee Strong, and of course our friends over at DiscoverPraxis.com. Check the link below, go over there and check them out. Listeners to The Essential 11, they get accepted into the program, get $1,000 towards the program, so you definitely want to give them a check. Today, we got to have Mr. Rafa Conde with us, and Rafa is, man, what a story this guy has, from growing up in Spain to coming back home and becoming this wildly successful Wall Street broker, leaving that because he just felt the calling to have a purpose and going in and having an illustrious career in law enforcement, SWAT, and just goes into all the amazing things that he's gotten to do. And then more recently, over the last 5 years, has been what's called the man of war and kind of put together this program they call the Crucible, and walking men through this really intense rite of passage in order to kind of reclaim who they were always meant to be. So we had a really good conversation here. I think you're going to really enjoy Mr. Rafa Conde. How are you, sir?
I am great, man. Thank you very much for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Man, pleasure is absolutely ours, man. Appreciate you taking the time to dive in and to give back to these young heroes, man. These are the guys that we are trying to raise up so that we're not fixing the guys that we're trying to fix right now. You know what I mean?
For sure. Love it.
Yes, sir. Before we jump into you, I just want to make sure you have full context on everything so that if you have any questions in particular, we can do that and then we'll kind of rock and roll. So,
excellent.
Just as kind of the background, I open schools, have schools here in Northern California and that are vastly different. It's part of a global network, but they're vastly different. It's all around character. It's all around personal responsibility. It's not any of the garbage that we see playing out in traditional schools. So I've been friends sure. with Tim Kennedy for a while, helping him open a school out there in Texas as well that is part of our network. And then he and Very I came nice. Together and same kind of mission as you, man. We're seeing the young men and we're seeing how masculinity is being just undercut and how true masculinity, the virtuous type of masculinity is being called toxic and our young men are suffering for that. So we wanted to create this program. And so we've got young men on here from quite literally all over the world who have committed to a year of just being better. They take on projects and challenges and workouts and get to speak with amazing men like yourself on a weekly basis. So that's what we've got rocking.
Awesome. I love it, man. The fact that these young men are here says a lot about their character.
Yes, sir.
Without a doubt.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. So if you're good with it, what we'd like to do for the hour is kind of you and I can rap a little bit and kind of go into the background. You know, I sent them a bunch of things on you, but I'd like to kind of talk about your story a little bit. And then these guys, you know, we'll open it up to them and they'll have better questions even than I will. So.
Yeah, man. Let's go.
I love it, man. I love it. So. I do want to kind of get the X-Men origin story for you. You know, I know kind of the overview of everything that I was able to find with you going from Wall Street into law enforcement and lifelong martial artist and, you know, a lot of crossover there. But then this Men of War Crucible that you've been doing for a while is just friggin' absolutely fantastic. So, you know, if you want to kind of give us the X-Men origin story, man, we can start from there.
Yeah. So, well, you know, my passion since I was 13 years old, basically, is when I started the martial arts. I really started studying more than anything the warrior mindset, which was I was completely taken by it. I started training at a very young age, you know, judo, jiu-jitsu, aikido, Chinese kung fu. And it was just for me, it was something much deeper than just going out and training at a school. It was really about the mind, learning to become better in every way. I was a big believer and I was very much against bullying from a very young age, man. I had this thing inside of me that I was just like, I was always trying to protect the bully. I guess I had some type of feeling in me that I never wanted anyone to step over me. I had seen it in school at a young age where there was just so much bullying. So for me, that was just a no-no. Mm-hmm. So I started developing my mind, my spirit. And, you know, I carried myself as such. You know, I trained tremendous amount. I, since 13 years old. I'll tell you right now, since July, when I was 13, this was in 19, because I'm 51 now. Okay. So 1983.
Okay.
I have not missed one night without reading. Okay. Literally.
I love that.
Not one night. I have been on my deathbed, actually, not too long ago, a few months ago, or almost, I wasn't in a tough, and I still read every freaking night.
I love it.
Sometimes it's even 10, 15 minutes, but the reality is, for me, studying and learning has been just part of who I am. Now, transition, basically, I was a Wall Street broker. I started at a young age, in my early 20s, did very well. Started my own firm eventually and had, managing almost $500 million. So I was very successful. I came up in a time where you can throw a dart, and every stock was flying, yeah. The technology boom. So that was, for me, it was a great opportunity to meet new people and be involved in that Wall Street boom. However, what I started to see very quickly was that in the industry, sometimes the integrity was lacking, honor was lacking. It was all about what kind of paycheck you were taking home rather than the client, rather than the person that you were working for. With that said, I got into Wall Street because I really was into the charting process. I love to chart stocks, and I felt that that was really in line with the warrior mindset. You needed to know everything a stock did. It was just a battlefield to throughout that time learning stocks. But regardless, I stepped up and said, you know what? No more of this. I want to do something very powerful for the community. I want to serve my community. And I looked in my wife's eyes and I said, I'm going to go from a guy making $500,000 a year to a guy that's going to be making $35,000 a year.
Yes, sir.
I asked her and I said, listen, I got to do something that touches the community. I want to be able to serve, protect. My dream before I even became a broker was to be a narcotics agent. And the reason I didn't go that route was because, I felt the money sucked. Right. That was the reality.
Right.
Okay. But somehow I came back around to it. And she looked at me and she goes, listen, go, live a dream. I'll stand by you. And that was a very good wife. Mm. So, rule of thumb, if you can get a woman by your side that way, that will go from living a lifestyle of, very nice lifestyle to a tough lifestyle, because there were some difficulty throughout time for sure. But I was able to persevere, change the hat into a police officer within 2 years. After winning the award in the Academy for Defensive Tactics, and I said, you know what? Not only do I want to be a police officer, but I want to be able to go into specialized units. I want to be able to teach in the police academy. I want to be able to see who's coming through on the street and get these young warriors battle ready for the street.
Yeah.
2 years after I became a cop, I was assigned to Vice, then moved over to the DEA task force, the government initiated task force, and worked undercover for most of my career in narcotics. At the same time, I was teaching in the police academy for over a decade, high liability firearms and defensive tactics. That entire career, for me, it's been incredible. Now, just to sum it down, and the reason I started Man of War about 5 years ago, I started seeing the decline of the warrior spirit in young individuals that were coming through the police academy.
Yes, sir.
I was traveling the world. I was traveling all South America, teaching SWAT units in tactics. I made the SWAT team. I made narcotics. I made, FTO, teaching in the police academy. I had a lot on my plate and I had a lot to offer because I was a sponge learning, constantly learning, right? And then I looked back and I said, you know what? We need to do something because this warrior spirit is missing from these young men. They were coming in the academy kind of entitled, kind of like thinking that they could just walk through this.
Yes, sir.
The police academy that I went through was a very difficult police academy. We had drill instructors. It was, pretty tough intense. Police academy. It wasn't your average police academy where it's just kind of you go and you pass. You know, a lot of people failed. And I said, you know what, let me start a podcast. I talked to a couple of buddies and they said, yeah, start a podcast. I started talking on like this on a mic.
Yep.
And I started infusing, because it's basically for me, it's in my core, the warrior aspect, right? The warrior spirit aspect of this, the mentality of a warrior, which to me, I still track that. That's what our Man of War is all about, is using those ancient warrior culture principles, such as from the Spartans, the Knights Templar, and the Samurai.
Mm-hmm.
So we built this company basically from the ground up. It has been absolutely mind-boggling successful. Men from all over the world are traveling to our rites of passage, because we don't call them a boot camps or training camps, where they're more of a rite of passage mm-hmm. to get into the brotherhood. And all I can tell you, man, we've changed lives. We have helped so many men, and I'm just honored and so proud of really what we've done. And I, that's my story. I mean, changing so from a police officer to a, changing from going from a Wall Street broker into a police officer, and now over the last 5 years being a CEO and a business owner, it has tested me in every way imaginable, without a doubt.
So much respect for that entire journey. And thank you for going. There's a lot. I wrote down a ton of different things too. And there's a lot of crossover, a lot of what you're talking about too. I feel from a visceral response, and I've got a few questions, just personally coming out of some of that stuff too. So talking about being 13 and understanding, I got into martial arts, at five, and it's been a lifelong process for me as well, from taekwondo to kickboxing to jiu-jitsu to mixed martial arts. And what fascinates me the most about all of that, like you, has always been that mindset. So you're 13, you're jumping into this. Who is kind of what was kind of the catalyst? And I know what you're saying around that bully mentality and wanting to go against that, and I totally relate to that as well. I know for me, having a father who was in law enforcement and was a pretty rough guy to grow up with, but that was the anti-bullying mindset was a part of that. And then I had the, if I'm honest, the Bruce Lees, right? The Chuck Norris is like some of these old school movies where I'm like, sure. Okay, I really resonate with that warrior mindset. And the Tony Blauer, which we were lucky enough to have Tony on here, a few weeks ago with us as well, and did a masterclass on fear for these young guys. But I remember watching him. Oh, he's a great guy, man, watching him at a young age. So who were some of those guys for you, that you kind of looked up to early on?
Oh, man. Bruce Lee is still
yes,
a mentor
sir.
To me in every way, shape, or form. I have read everything from Soups to Nuts literally. And he's a philosopher to me. I think that he is was a tremendous individual. Miyamoto Musashi, a lot of his writings, the art of war. I have had several instructors in my life, several senseis, Kanai Sensei. And I could name probably a dozen of different instructors. But the man that had the most impact in my life for sure has been Bruce Lee, as far from a perspective of martial arts and mindset, without a doubt.
Love it. Yeah, that's for these young guys who, as we get further and further away from Bruce and his legacy and his work, as far as the current social impact, obviously passed long ago and hasn't been able to continue to write and make film and all of that. He is one of those legends that I think, we have a duty to carry on. Like you said, it's the philosopher, that warrior spirit. It's hard to find somebody who embodied that, as much as Bruce always has. So yeah. And Musashi, that's wonderful things. And I love what you said about the consistency in reading and making that a priority too. The ability for a man to be able to download the experiences and thoughts. And it's never the same as going in and experiencing something for yourself, but it is such a leg up on those who refuse to give themselves that gift. I love that. What are you reading right now? What's kind of on the shelf right now?
Right now, I'm actually reading a book by Stephen Pressfield, a good friend of mine, called Man at Arms.
Got it.
That's a new book. It's a new book that he just published, and just started reading it about a week and a half ago.
Yep.
And I'm loving the journey. It's all about the Spartans. And let me backtrack a little bit. When I talked about the bullies, I just want to make one of them. When I was 9 years old, this is a quick story. I lived in Spain. My father was studying medicine in Spain. Mm. And as I write my book, it should be released here in the next 3 months. I've been writing it a year and a half, and there's been so many interesting stories that I sit down and I remember. But this was a catalyst for me to start that bully mindset at 9 years old. I went down to get bread for my parents. That was a normal thing. They had a bakery in the bottom of we were staying in the apartment building. I went downstairs and I entered the store, and I saw there were gypsies were a very common thing back then. And there were young gypsies. We're talking between the ages of 10 and 15 years old. And they used to, it was not uncommon for them to go and rob individuals, you mm-hmm. know, pickpocket and, you know, and do all sorts of, and as I walked out of the bakery, we had one kid put a knife on my throat. The other kid basically ripped the bread off my my hands, and they held me there they patted me down for about a minute or so, making sure I had no money, see if I had any money, more money. And they were like, you know, talking to me in a way that was very demeaning and very it hit me hard. Mm-hmm. You know, it hit me hard. I ran upstairs, and after they let me go, and I basically, you know, told my parents kind of half the truth, because I kind of said, you know what, I don't want to sound like a weakling, like these kids just kind of approached me and put a knife on my throat and I couldn't fight them off. My whole body went limp.
Yeah.
Honestly. And it's just like my reaction was so bad that from that day on, I just said, you know what, no more. And my parents weren't well off. We were, you know, struggling at that time. And so they couldn't afford to put me in martial arts training. So what I did at that young age, at 9 years old, I just, you know, kicked the bag where there was a hanging bag that my dad had, and just did all sorts of cool things and watched TV and try to emulate other guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, man. No, I mean, I get that. And that's, you know, there's value in that, but the most valuable part of that is even before those skills are getting honed, you're mimicking the physical moves, but I'm sure you started to mimic the mental state. You started to mimic that warrior mindset. You started to cultivate, you know, that entire thing, which was, like you said, that's foundational in the entire process. Yeah, that's
no doubt.
I fully get that. I love that you left that career because of the integrity and honor that you did not see in that. And I fully get the, you know, again, the drop in. I did the same thing and had the same car. I remember pulling over and calling my wife on the freeway going, hey, going from this good paying job to a very non good paying job right now. And we just had our first kid, and, you know, but this is what we need to do to go where we need to go. And that full support on that. That's a huge lesson there. What department, where were you at? Where did you grow up, and where did you end up working? What kind of departments or what area were you in?
All right. So I grew up in Miami.
You did? Okay.
Most of my, from like 3 years old to 10 years old, I lived in Spain in Seville. That's where my father was studying medicine. So when I was younger, it was difficult for me to engage in good, solid friendships, mm-hmm. because we were bouncing back and
all
forth
over the place.
In different schools. Man,
yeah.
That was difficult. But then we moved into Palm Beach County. The first department that I worked for was Riviera Beach Police, which is, if you look it up, it's where crack cocaine started. It's a very violent city. It's considered one of the top 20 violent cities in the country.
Wow.
And number one in the state. So what I saw there
fire,
and Yep. What I saw there, I can't even explain. It would take 10 hours to explain what I've seen in my career. And I moved to the neighboring department about 7 years ago. When I moved to the neighboring department, that basically was pretty similar, I mean, as far as crime and violence. And so, throughout that time, though, for the most part, I mean, I was assigned out to a task force, and we worked one of the biggest cases. I was the creator of that case and went undercover when the VA Medical Center for a year. And I worked alongside the FBI, the Office of Inspector General, DEA, and then finally, a good portion of my career before I switched over was with the DEA task force, or the diversion squad, the tactical diversion squad. And I was there for a couple of years, and then I decided to change departments because I was kind of like on the back end of my career.
Right.
And I wanted to, little did I know that I really wasn't moving to a much, the violence wasn't that much less. I thought that maybe I could be more of a field trainer, which I did. Then I became a hostage negotiator and all that good stuff. But it's been an interesting career. The things that I have seen, Matt, I can't, it's difficult to explain.
Yes, sir. No, I fully get that. I fully appreciate that too. And still with so many friends and family and law enforcement. And again, my dad and his buddies growing up, and some of the things that I even heard, just heard them talking about, and some of the stories as I got older that were shared. And, it's something that, movies don't even always do, they never do justice to the reality of what goes on and what you guys, see and deal with. So, again, much respect on that. I love what you said too about the spirit, seeing that warrior spirit gone from those young men that were coming to the academy, and many of my, so as I've been building these schools and, podcasts and the apprenticeship program, all this, I also travel and do a lot of speaking and consulting with companies all over the world. And the word that you used, entitled, is the number one thing I get from my clients, is that's the spirit that they see from the young people coming in aligns more with that than anything of resilience, that anything we would, say as part of that warrior kind of mentality. And many of those clients have started to, I've started working with the U.S. military, and I've literally had leaders in all of the branches that are going, hey, are we going to have to lower our standards across the board, because we just can't get young people that are meeting these standards, right? And these are real conversations that are happening. And to me, that just speaks of a massive epidemic. And then building the schools, you see that. And I think it's a multifaceted issue. I love that we're having that conversation. And I tell these guys all the time, if they refuse to be that, the world is just going to open up for them. The world 100%. It's going to reward them sticking to that. So, I've seen that in so many different areas. My last question, and gentlemen, I'm going to open it up to you because I know you guys are going to have questions. So put your hands up in the box. I want to ask Mr. Conde one more before I open it up to you guys. We're part of this. We're part of this kind of cultural group. We got some mutual buddies, Blauer, Mickler, right? Jack Donovan, Bedros, so many of these guys that are pushing this because we need all of this. With what you've been doing with Man of War and this rite of passage, what are some of the favorite transformations that you've seen? Guys that have come in and joined this brotherhood and pushed themselves outside of the comfort zone and now have shifted so many things in their life. What are some of your, maybe one or two of kind of your favorite things that you've seen from them?
Well, just recently, I can tell you a quick little story. We had a 21-year-old, which is our youngest that ever graduated. Okay, now keep in mind, there's a lot of programs out there. However, I will tell you without a doubt that this crucible, we have a dropout rate of about 38%. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's very, very difficult. So it's not for everyone at all. Now, on the flip side to that, this young man came to us. He was overweight by about 80 pounds. He came into the Crucible about 25 pounds lighter. He needed to lose 60. However, his spirit, okay, there were guys there. I mean, it's incredible because I go back now and I look, his name is Anthony, and there were guys like Ironman runners, triathletes, mm-hmm. that dropped out, Navy combat vet dropped out before him, and these guys were in much better shape than him. His spirit, his drive, his internal fortitude was incredible. When he graduated from here about 5 months ago, he promised that he would lose the weight. And also, one of the things that he had is that he had, suicide tendencies, mm-hmm. where people were bullying him. People were you're fat, you're this, whatever. His mother had died from cancer about 8 months prior. And his father had was killed in a car accident about 2 years ago.
Wow.
Okay. It was him, and he was taking care of a younger brother that was 17.
Wow.
This young man basically graduated, became a made man. He went through the process. He lost 50 pounds as of yesterday. He marked down 50 pounds. We had an interview with him, and he was just phenomenal. He now is, he's working for a company, forget the name of the company, but it's basically outsourcing help for young men who are having thoughts of suicide.
Wow.
And he's going to be featured now in a Newsmax segment in about 2 weeks for his, change, losing 80 pounds and changing his methodology, his life, his outlook. It's so powerful, the entire transformation, and the fact that he's still out there taking care of his younger brother. It's an unbelievable story.
Yes, sir.
It's such an uplifting story that I've seen a lot of stories, but this one's particularly just touched my heart, with no parents. Having his mom just die recently and his father out of his life for the last 2 years, my hat goes off to this kid for sure.
Man, all the things that everybody else in society would say, look, those are the reasons. Those are the reasons that it's okay to be sad, but you should stay sad, and we'll just come around and support you. It's okay to play the victim on this because you've got it so rough. It's all those things that society, and then the reality of that is, the more that people would come around and give that kind of encouragement, the more he would have gone into that rabbit hole and had more and more of those tendencies and the weight would have kept piling on. All of those things would have gone completely the opposite way if he had owned that. But he chose to own something else. He chose to own, transformation. He chose to own getting a purpose. He chose to own, not being the victim, not playing that, and going in and dominating that warrior spirit and becoming something else and being that phoenix that comes up. Man, I love that.
Without a doubt.
I love that, man. That's awesome. That's rad. That fires me up. And again, you putting out that crucible and giving him that, that way that to go and create that transformation for him, man, is powerful, powerful stuff. I love that. All right, Mr. Josiah, you are up, sir.
Thank you, sir, for being on.
Thank you for having me.
Just wondering, what would you say is the first step to having that warrior mentality?
First step, right off the bat, all right, get uncomfortable. Do things that are outside the box. Okay. We love to say, we want to, repetition is great, but guess what? If you're still repeating things over and over again, and they're just the same old lame things, and you're not pushing yourself just a little bit more every single day, you're not growing. So that's how you start developing your mindset, stronger mindset. Just push, push, push just a little bit harder every single day.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you. They've got, Tim and I sat down with a few other kind of some special ops guys, and I don't know if you're familiar with Ray Care and a couple spec ops dudes, and put together these workouts for these guys. And we did, you know, it's a year long program, and they've got workouts that basically take them through 3 months. They go back and they're repeating. And at this point it's like, cool, now you're doing some of the same stuff, but you need to beat your time. You need to beat your score. You need to, yes. you know, kind of every single bit is raising, you know, continuously raising the bar, staying out of that comfort zone. That's a dangerous spot to be, man.
For sure. Without a doubt.
Mr. Jack Hill, you are up, sir.
Thank you for being on. My question was, if you had a book to recommend to, well, like just anybody, what do you think it would be?
That's a good question. There's so many books, boy, that I've read that are, but I'll tell you what, Living the Marshall Way. Okay. It's a book, that I probably read, I don't know, 10 times. It's a martial arts book in general, but it talks about life, in such a powerful way. And it helps you understand, what the warrior mindset is, how to live your life more structured. And the tone of the book is very much for young men. Even though it's meant for everybody, but it's a tone where it kind of starts you off from the bottom here. So I would consider that book. I think it'll start teaching you a little bit about discipline in your life, about how to structure your life, how to divide, you know, your life by segments. So you're all in all the time in every segment of your life. So you're focused in studying, in school, whatever you are doing, you're all there all the time. Being present is so important. And that's one of the main things that this book teaches.
Thank you, sir.
Living the Marshall Way. That's awesome. All right, we're building out some of the recommendations. You know, we've got books that these guys are taking on every month, but we always tell them we can substitute out, and we're building out kind of our substitute list and other recommendation lists. And so I'm going to put that in there, Living the Marshall Way. And you said you have a book that you are working on right now as well, right?
So yes, this will be, I'm thinking, probably November.
Okay.
By the time, you know, and it's a... It's a deep book. I mean, it's been a year and a half writing it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of meat in there.
Yeah, I have no doubt. And it is based on some of like your life and the experiences and kind of going into a lot of that stuff.
It's some of my experiences in my life. And then also we break down my studies of the warrior mindset, my experiences after coaching, you know, thousands of men throughout my career, and how they have responded through some scientific research and things like that. So we wanted this book to be something very different that's been written about, you know. So a lot of times people, you know, will read something and they get it, but there's no backing to that.
Right.
And we wanted to make sure that we had some background to that, to make sure that the material covered in this book was something that's impactful, something real.
I love it, man. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, this is a complete side note, but one of the things we do here on this campus is we host, if you're familiar with TED Talks, and we're hosting TEDx Roseville here in about a week. I have some great speakers coming in, and so we're already kind of, it's going to be a fantastic event, and we just want to pour back into the community, and then any money that comes out of that goes back into scholarships for young heroes and stuff too. So, but we're already looking towards, you know, our 2022 event and stuff too. So if you're ever interested in taking the stage on some of that, man, you know,
we'd love to continue the conversation
because I think it's something people need to continuously hear. Love it.
Awesome.
All right, Kaleo, you're up, sir.
Thank you, sir. So I have three questions. Two of them I stole from a buddy of mine, and the third one, Mr. Matt, has actually provided for us so that we could have interviews of our own. But the first one, I'll pull it up right here. The first one is, if a young leader wanted nothing more than to work for you, what would you want to see in them?
So you're asking me if a young leader wanted to work for me, what do I need to see in him?
Yes, sir.
First thing right off the bat, honor. Honor is 100% the first thing I look at. Okay. Is this leader someone that says something and follows through with it no matter what? All right. His word to me has to carry a tremendous amount of weight. Okay. That's the first quality that I look at. A very close second quality, his courage, level of courage, meaning that is he capable of sometimes saying things that I may not be comfortable with, like, hey, walking up to me and saying, hey, I don't agree with something. And I love that. I love when young leaders come to me and say, hey, you know what? I don't think that this is the best way, or I have a different idea or something like that. Because as a leader, you have to be able to confront your fears. And sometimes the fear is not walking up to the, you know, you're fearful to walk up to the boss and say, hey, I have a different strategy that may work or something like that. So I love when a young leader has that relentless fire inside and has courage.
And my second question is, what is the definition of maturity to you?
Maturity is a word that I love to use, because with maturity, wisdom is aligned, right? So I connect the two, wisdom and maturity, all right? As you grow through your experiences, you become more mature, okay? And your, I mean, basically any experience that you've had in your life is going to build maturity within you, okay? So for me, is coupling all your experiences in your life, okay, and bringing them into something that you can, it's almost like a little bit of a tool belt, right? You reach to your tool belt every time. Like if your experiences go, you know, you're in a situation where you need to dig into that tool belt, you can go back into that tool belt because you're mature enough and you've been there and you've done that. That experience has carried you to a level where you can reach into your tool belt and say, okay, this, I remember this. This is what I did to get through this. This is how it turned out. So I'm going to do this. Okay. Maturity also has a lot to do with the way that you perceive life, right? As you mature, the way you perceive life, you perceive yourself, you perceive certain situations completely changes. So the beautiful part about maturity is that it'll open your eyes rather quickly when you see things in front of you, and it gives you your response time. The way that you act and react to that is so much quicker.
Gosh, so good.
All right, thank you, sir. And you answered my third one pretty much with how you answered my first question.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Kaleo.
Beautiful.
Kaleo, because I was talking to him earlier. He's from Hawaii.
He is, yeah. He's from Hawaii and now in Wisconsin, which they call the Hawaii of the North. Nobody calls it that, Kaleo, at all. but Wisconsin's still cool. Mr. Will Graves out there in Texas.
What suggestions would you give to some young leader who's wanting to join the SWAT teams?
All right. So first thing, when you want to come into an agency, to a police department, a lot of guys, especially young guys, because teaching in the police academy, one of the things that I like to do is ask the recruits, hey, what do you guys want to do? What do you look forward to? And what type of assignment do you want to be in the police force? You know, most of the guys are going to come out and say, hey, I want to be either a detective, narcotics agent, or an undercover agent, a canine handler, or a SWAT operator. All right. It's one of those four things 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. No one just says, hey, I want to sit in patrol for the rest of my career. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, with that said, what I would recommend first and foremost, if you want to be accepted in the SWAT team, is a lot of people say, well, I got to be physically fit. I got to have to be mentally sharp. Yes, 100% you do. But more importantly, you have to learn how to communicate with individuals. You have to build a name for yourself that you are a team player within that department. If you are looked at as an individual that doesn't really work well with others, you can scrap that completely, because I promise you the SWAT team is not going to select you. They want guys that are team players, because the SWAT team is a team, right? They have to do things together. And more importantly, they have to rely on one another. As a SWAT operator, one of the most important things for me was that I was comfortable and confident the guy that I had on my right, my left, my back, you know, my life was trusted, you know, on them. So you have to be a good, good team player. That's what I would, first thing that I would look at, someone trying to get into a SWAT team. Make your name as a team player, help others around you. Don't ask for anything in return. And I promise you, if you're fit and you're mentally sharp, you will make that SWAT team.
Great advice.
Thank you.
Great advice. All right, Traden Thompson.
So I was wondering, what, like, the impact of reading a book every night, not a whole book, but reading every night has, like, done.
All right. Well, I'll tell you right off the bat. I'm a big believer that every night you must go with a win. Okay. In other words, when you put your head on your pillow, you must have a victory. Okay. There is no shot in hell that you should put your head on your pillow without a victory. Okay, that I'm just letting you know right now, whether it's reading a book, whether it's, you know, doing your homework, whatever it is that you have, you got to go to bed with a victory. Now, for me, reading a book, first and foremost, it's a habit, and it's something that I feel relaxes me, and it lets me absorb, and I feel like I'm being victorious while I'm reading, because I'm learning, right? It's that victory, no matter what. I try to read between 3 to 5 to 7 pages, sometimes a little bit more, but there are nights where I am exhausted. However, you know, I try to read 3 pages. And a lot of times what I realize is that I retain that information in the morning. And when I wake up, I like to remember what I read. And for some reason, for me anyways, I don't know if there's any scientific research done about this, but for me, when I read at night, I tend to retain it in the morning and it stays with me.
That's awesome. No, I love that. I love the concept, especially as you get, you know, busy, you're taking on more things in your life. And as you get older and you've got relationships or you've got kids and you've got, you know, business, you've got work, you've got all of these things too. It is very easy, you know, nighttime and you are exhausted. It's easy to swirl the other way. You know, it's easy to let the mind go to all the things that you think aren't going right or whatever. So making sure that you go down and have that, I love that mindset of having that victory right before the head hits the pillow. Yeah, that's good stuff. Mr. Fenley Steele.
Okay, so my question for you is, you said that you did a lot of different martial arts, and I was wondering which one of those martial arts that you did was your favorite.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I'll tell you, judo was definitely up there. I felt that judo for me was achieving the Shodan, the black belt rank in judo was something very, very powerful for me. It was a lot of hard training, very intense training. I mean, it hitting the mat over and over again. So for me, I would have to say at this point, if you're going to say what my favorite one is, there's a certain connection that I have with judo, very closely followed by Aikido. Aikido was also something that I put my heart and soul into. That was a process, a very deep learning process. So first judo, I would say number one in my book.
That's awesome. And like a lot of men, my first introduction to Aikido was Steven Seagal. Right? Yes. I mean, that was my very first. I remember watching Above the Law as a young man and watching the opening.
What a great movie. I still love it.
Gosh, what a great. So my nephew is named Nico, and that was Seagal's name in that movie, right? So yeah, I mean, it is a great movie. That opening scene You know, I remember sitting there, and I had just gotten into, you know, I was still little, and I had just gotten into Taekwondo, and just watching that, and I'm going, what on earth am I witnessing right now? Just fascinating. And the warrior spirit is very much alive in Aikido, and I love that tradition.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and I love that you incorporate Antonio. I see your hand, and I'm going to call on you in just 1 second, sir. I love that physical combat is incorporated, you know, without kind of giving all the secrets away of the Crucible, which obviously I'm not all the way fully aware of, but I know that physical combat is a part of that. How many would you say, you know, or you may know, for how many men that come in and go through that program, how many of them is that their first experience actually in a physical altercation with another man?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Well, I would say probably about more than half, maybe 55 to 60% of those men have never been hit in the face. They've never had any competition against another man. So, you know, we're not looking at that moment when we throw them into the pit. We don't really care too much about their technique. We just want to make sure that they, if they get hit, they get, you know, they got to hit back.
Yep.
You know, that's what it's there for. So yeah, that introduction of getting smacked in the face, you know, having that contact against another person, completely just elevates the game for sure.
For sure. I mean, it's that old Fight Club adage of how much can you really know about yourself if you've never been punched in the face, you know?
And that's very true.
It is. There is so much learning in that. You know, one of my friends who these gentlemen have gotten a chance to meet, Mr. Tanner Guzzi, came on and got to speak with them. And one of the things that Tanner did to push himself was he made himself go learn how to box. He'd never been in a physical altercation. So he made himself go learn how to box, but he didn't want to just do, you know, the classes and get in shape and learn how to throw a punch and learn how to move and learn the footwork. Sure. He wanted all that, but he said, hey, I need the experience of actually getting in the ring. And so he talks very openly about putting himself in the ring, you know, two separate occasions. And in his words, he says, I got wrecked. You know, I just didn't have, but he said, I wouldn't change it for anything. Like, I needed that experience. I needed to find out what goes on inside my mind while all that's going. I can improve the technique. I can get better at boxing, but I need to see what happens when I'm getting beat up. I need to see what my mind does. I need to see what my reaction is. Sure. Do I fight back? You know, how do I stay calm? It's all of those things. And you really, that's one of those things you just don't learn any other way.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's getting hit in the face, you know, really shines a different perspective in life.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Absolutely does. All right, Antonio, you're up, sir.
Thank you for coming on this call, sir.
Thank you.
I would have two questions, but I lost my train of thought with the second one. So what's the difference between Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and your Japanese Jiu-Jitsu I saw?
All right. So Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which I've trained extensively, and also it's more the difference between the two. Japanese Jiu-Jitsu is more about throws, joint locks, wrist locks. It's a little bit more dynamic in movement. When it comes to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's a lot more about grappling, a good focus, even though not all traditionally. So, but a good focus is mostly on the ground. When it comes to different, you know, pins and chokes and all sorts of, I mean, nowadays, I mean, my goodness, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has gotten to a level where there are so many different types of entanglements, different escapes. And I mean, it's a very vast, vast art, without a doubt, and it's still growing. Mm-hmm. So Japanese Jiu-Jitsu, it's a little bit more traditional. It's a little bit more linear in certain aspects, and it's focused more on some throwing, joint locks, we do a lot of, you know, chokes and things like that. But definitely different. They're more about throwing and staying on their feet than they are going into the ground like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mm.
Good question. So yeah, so a lot more crossover with judo.
Yes.
Yeah. So a question about the Aikido. I've watched a couple like videos on it and people reviewing it and how it's, people say, I mean, I can't judge because I don't personally do it, but they say that it's more of the person getting the move done on them that's actually doing the move? Like the throws are more.
Yes. So that
performance.
Has. Yeah, that has been so this is the deal with martial arts. Okay, there's a lot of guys out there that and I'm going to put this to you because you guys are all very clear and understanding what I'm going to say here. So when I have fought, and I have fought not in the ring as often, even though I've fought numerous times in competition. But when I have fought in the middle of the night at 3 o'clock in the morning with a guy with a gun in the middle of nowhere with no backup, okay, I will tell you with 100% certainty level that if you don't have the spirit and the drive to survive, I don't care what martial art you are training in, okay, it's your instinct to survive takes over, okay. Aikido helped me in a way that more than any other martial art, okay, I'm telling you right now, more than any, because I was able to redirect and move myself. And this has been, I don't even know how many fights I've been in law enforcement, including one undercover where they made me and I had to fight a guy inside a truck. I mean, I can go on and on, but Aikido has always helped me redirect the energy of the person and put myself in a position at the very least to be in a position of superior tactical advantage to take that person either off balance, be able to disengage and go to my secondary weapon, and so on. So when you say that, and I hear this all the time, there are some Aikido forms or people that train that look very fluffy. That yes, there is a side of this, it's called ukemi, which ukemi is the art of falling. And there is a connection between the two people moving and then throwing, and then the person goes, and they're saying that the person jumps into it. Yes, many times that is absolutely true. However, what it's not said is that the person jumps into it to prevent themselves from being hurt. Mm-hmm. Okay. They rotate in a way that kind of blends with that throw. If the person resisted that throw can be very painful. Mm-hmm. A wrist lock, for example, you know, you're putting with a lot of power behind it. If you're not rotating your body over that wrist lock, you're going to eat that wrist lock and your wrist is gone. Mm-hmm. Now on the flip side to that, there are some very fluffy styles of Aikido. That is not the style that I studied. I studied a very hard form of Aikido, where if you go and see these forms of Aikido, you'll know right off the bat that these people are not throwing themselves in the air. So like what you're saying, mm-hmm. Okay, these is a lot more hard edge, impactful throwing arts that I studied within the Aikido community. So your answer is kind of, I'm giving you a twofold answer here. Ukemi is to protect themselves. So sometimes it looks like the person is throwing themselves, but there are many times in little fluffy elements of Aikido, especially, how do I say this? What we used to call the West Coast martial arts. A lot of the West Coast styles are very much about the ki and the power and a little fluffy for my liking. So yes, there is a blend of that for sure.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. One last question. If you were able to add a certain martial art form into all police training, what would be the most beneficial for de-escalating a situation, and what would you choose?
Aikido tenfold, 100 times over.
Hmm.
100 times over. And unfortunately, what happens is this, and this is one of the disagreements that I've had in the police academy, they tend to teach a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu because that's the hot thing now. That's the MMA, you know. Yep. But I will tell you this, from experience being out there on the street, fighting real criminals and taking people down, like not a joke. I did not work for a city that, you know, every once in a while you got into that. We got into that often, yep. Often. I mean, very, very screwed up. But I will tell you that Aikido, again, it works, absolutely works. Redirecting, being able to off balance the person with good timing works,
yeah.
Without a doubt. I would say that first. Aikido will de-escalate the situation by using certain techniques that you can pin the person even for half a second. It makes the difference because somebody, you know, you have a partner or a backup that comes in and could, you know, cuff. And so for me, Aikido, that would be my answer.
I love it.
Thank you, sir.
And in the true, you know, Bruce Lee kind of spirit of his philosophy is, you know, use what is useful, discard what is not, right? And yes, you see in those practical situations, you see what is the thing that is useful the majority of the time. And not saying you have to integrate any of the fluffy stuff. You integrate what is useful and right, discard the rest. No, that's so good.
Yeah, hard edge Aikido is not going to look like the fluffy, you know, it's on the street, does not look anything like right, what's, you know, when they're practicing on the mat. It's a whole different element.
True story. All right, Will Graves, looks like you're going to have the last one so that we can honor our guest time. You're up, sir.
What was the most difficult part of being a police officer and what got you through that?
All right, that's a good question. All right. So let me just give you a 30-second clip of what I've seen in my career. I've had people blow their brains out in front of me. I've had babies die in my arms. I've had people jump off 25-story balconies right within my grasp. I've been the last person that a young man has looked at while he's bleeding out after being shot numerous times. I have basically seen the men beat their wives to death right in front of me, and I'm not able to get through because there's a huge fence behind, and I'm on and on. I mean, I could go on over and over again, but the most impactful thing for me, it's not fun when you're walking, when you get a call that somebody got ran over by a train, right? Or I've seen car accidents, right, where people get decapitated. You got the head here, the arms here. I've seen so many different elements of, you know, having to give CPR to, and this is a daily thing almost, heroin addicts, right? Where you know that they're about to die and you're just giving them CPR with a needle right there next to your face, and you know you're trying not to touch it. And I've seen kids, we can go on and on. So look, the bottom line is, for me, the shittiest experience when it came to a police officer is when a baby died in my arms. Okay. Another shitty experience actually recently was when we had a guy basically spit in my face a day prior, tell me I'm a piece of shit cop, right? That I'm a pig, right? That a hatred that you have for police officers. And the next day I get a call about somebody down as I'm running up the stairs and the blood is pouring down and I'm making my way up. I see him basically on the edge of the stairs with a gun in his hand and he's bleeding out everywhere, right? I got his girlfriend screaming, his mother screaming, sister screaming, do something, do something, do something. This is the guy that called me a pig less than 24 hours ago. He spit in my face pretty much. All right. So what I do is I drop down and start giving this guy CPR, trying to bring him back and hold him till the medics arrive. Meanwhile, I have his family on top of me, yelling, bring him back, help him, help him, help him. So that's pretty difficult right there. When you have to put everything aside in your anger, you know, that this guy actually did that and how much you know that he hates you. You got to put that aside and you got to do your job. That's difficult. Very, very difficult. Hope that answered your question.
Man. And is part of that, you know, going to, I mean, you're dealing with some things that, God forbid, you know, any of these guys ever have to even deal with. Is part of that going to bed and the reading and kind of going out on the wind is, you know, is part of that too.
Well, you know what, when you walk into a house, right, when you walk into a house and you see, and I was the second on scene, when you walk into a house and you see that a family has been killed by the parent and the father shoots two children and then his wife and himself, and you walk in there and you look around and you're like, shit, you're the second guy in and you're seeing this and you're absorbing this and your heart's just freaking crushed. Unfortunately, things like that just, my wife says I'm very jaded, and unfortunately, you know, she may be right. You know, you get jaded, but one thing that I'm a big believer in when you talk about books, and I decompress.
Yeah.
I don't carry that with me around. And that's where, when people start getting PTSD, and in law enforcement, there's plenty of it. It's just not talked about.
Yeah.
For me, reading is it's a way to decompress, kind of getting myself out into a little bit of another planet.
No doubt, man. I mean, it is, you're one of those warriors that's putting yourself out there for the greater good, and just so much respect for that, and so much gratitude for what you do and for what you've, you know, on the law enforcement side, and then what you're doing though to help perpetuate, you know, men in our culture, in our world. It is something that is so vastly needed, and just so thankful that you have taken on the call for that purpose, my friend. What are some of the best ways, if you're okay with it, we'd like to release this as an episode of the Essential 11 as well, which, sure, you know, goes out to, you know, listeners all over the world, and we've got a lot of young men that listen and a lot of parents that are listening. And so how can we continue to support you? Where would you have anybody go to find out what you got going on?
You know, we, on IG, we are at Man of War with two R's. I'm still trying to find that guy with the regular,
with the one.
it's been a ghost.
That's funny.
But we are on YouTube. We just started a new YouTube channel. We have some great content there, youtube.com/Man of War. And also on Facebook, you know, all you got to do is look for Man of War or Man of War Crucible, and you'll find it. Yeah, man, look, what you're doing, Matt, here is great. I love to speak to the young generation, young up-and-coming leaders, very powerful. So I commend you on that.
Thank you, brother.
I think this is something that will impact so many, and we need this. We need this in our society, desperately need this.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate that. Appreciate you pouring into these guys. I'm going to take them through some more conversation and take a look at some victories and challenges today. But if you're okay with it, I'll reach back out to you here a little later this afternoon. I'd like to send you something and just kind of keep the conversation rolling, however we can continue to support you as well. So,
of course. Of course. Gentlemen, it was an honor to be here. I hope I answered your questions. Okay. If you need anything, feel free to DM me through social media. All right, I'm an open book, without a doubt. Awesome. Thank you, and God bless.
Gentlemen,
thank you,
Matt. A big thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, brother. There you go, man. Look forward to checking out his book that'll be coming out. We'll be promoting that as well. But for right now, go over to IG and check out Man of War. And you heard him say it. It's with two R's at the end. And give them a follow. Give him some support. So, speaking of support, super grateful for yours. Thank you for continuing to listen, continuing to share, and all the good things everybody's saying about the Essential 11. Catch you guys next time.